Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Welcome to the Alex Jones Show on this Monday, November 24th, 2014. I'm David Knight. I'll be your host today. We're going to be joined in the second hour with Paul Joseph Watson. And in the third hour, we're going to go to our reporters in Ferguson, Missouri, Jakari Jackson and Joe Biggs. Now, they've been there all last week waiting for the grand jury verdict to see what's going to happen. It's been taking quite a while. And of course, tension is building more every day as people are getting angrier and angrier, as one person put it, getting angrier about the delay in this. We're going to talk about why it's taking so long and why what is a grand jury? What is their responsibility? How are they different from a regular jury? We've seen some people say that they didn't even believe that a grand jury was the appropriate response to this. There are other ways to do this. In many states, there aren't even grand juries in the United States. So there's a lot of different ways that you can get an indictment. Of course, the prosecutor himself can do it. There's not really, even though this is a grand jury, the grand just really reflects the number of people on the jury. There's typically not a judge in control of the process. There's a prosecutor in control of the process. And so he's going to kind of present evidence to try to get what he wants to do, whether that is a prosecution or letting the person off. There are a lot of people who wish that this would go to a trial so everything could be examined there. But we're also going to be talking about what's breaking in the news. Let me give you some of the stories on Infowars.com, the breaking news there. We have a court ruling that a violent raid against homeschoolers was unconstitutional. We're going to talk about this in a lot of detail because this is really an egregious situation. The Child Protective Services and the police, essentially after harassing this family for quite some time, basically were told you're not going to come in the house again unless you've got a court order. They were coming after them for, quote, a messy house. That was the issue that they had with these homeschoolers, according to them. They did not have a search warrant. They came in and got very violent. We're going to read you exactly what they did. They've been slapped down. This is Kurt Nemo's article. They've been slapped down by the court in that state, says that what they did was unconstitutional. They are also fighting back with a civil suit. So we're going to tell you about that. It's interesting to compare that and contrast that with what's going on, for example, in the UK with members of parliament in Westminster and a pedophile ring 30 years ago. Of course, Scotland Yard and the press were told to cover up any mention of that. We've seen that happen with Seville, the entertainer that was there as well. But it's not just there, of course. We've had our own Franklin cover-up, our own Franklin scandal in this country. This is something that happens at the highest echelons of every government. And as the article we have up on InfoWars last week pointed out, the higher up you go in governments, the more you see this kind of sexual perversion, the pedophilia. This is why it's very concerning to see them trying to intrude themselves into the lives of families using CPS. We've also seen how that plays out. There's also a report that broke today. Actually, on November 21st, the state of Connecticut issued a 114-page report on the shooting at Sandy Hook. Now, there's taking this in a different direction from gun control. Now they're trying to use this as a pretense to essentially enact the same kind of controls that we've seen enacted in Scotland, where you are assigned a government minder from birth until the age of 21, where government psychologists are going to come and intrude themselves into your homes because, as they pointed out, they're concerned about siloed systems of education, physical health, mental care for children. You understand what they're saying when they say siloed? They're saying, you're isolated. You're too isolated. We need to be able to come into your home at any time we wish. We need to be able to evaluate you. And of course, there's a lot involved in that. We're going to continue with the news. And we're also going to have, as I said, Jakari Jackson and Joe Biggs are in Ferguson. If we have an early verdict, we will let you know immediately what's going on there and what the verdict is. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Thank you. We are on the march. The Empire is on the run. Alex Jones and the GCN Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight on this Monday, November 24th, 2014. I'm going to be joined in the second hour with Paul Joseph Watson. We're going to talk about the story that's up on Infowars.com today. Democrats have approved reparations for descendants of blacks victimized by 1898 Wilmington race riot. Let me repeat that, 1898. That's like 112 years ago or 116 years old, okay? You know, North Carolina is kind of unique in the sense that it's got more voters on the roll that are over 100, even over 112 than any other state. But I don't think there's anybody alive that is really responsible for that in North Carolina. But, of course, the Democrats are trying to do some political grandstanding to appeal to their base that they have just massively betrayed with the immigration amnesty decree by Obama. It's going to be the minorities, blue-collar workers, those at the lower end of the income scale that are going to be hurt the most by this massive importation of low-cost workers. They're the ones who've been hurt the most by it to start with. So we're going to talk to Paul Joseph Watson about that. We also have an article that I want to get to about court rules violent raid against homeschoolers is unconstitutional. We're going to talk about that in depth, what really happened in this particular raid. You will not believe what happened with that. Also in Ferguson, and Ja'Kari Jackson and Joe Biggs are going to be joining us in the third hour from Ferguson, perhaps sooner if we have a verdict there. They say the police in Ferguson violate court order by arresting journalists. That's a story that's up on Infowars.com by Steve Watson. A Ferguson mob marches in St. Louis City, shuts down a highway, and a reporter is hit in the head. We also have the Texas governor-elect plans new lawsuit against Obama. He says the president is unconstrained by the Constitution. That's Greg Abbott. He's been the attorney general. He has sued Obama over 30 times already as attorney general in Texas. He is the governor-elect. He was on one of the news programs yesterday. We're going to have some clips from that later on in the show. It's like a narcotic addiction. He says, Obama caps off Amnesty Immigration Week by hitting the links in Las Vegas, going golfing yet again. And of course, no surprise here, Mexico and Central America thank Obama for his amnesty decree. Yes, we've seen this before. And of course, even though the Mexican government, the Mexican president does everything he can to educate people in Mexico about how to game our system and get on the welfare rolls, how to come in here illegally. He assists people to traverse across his country if they're coming from points south. But of course, no one is allowed to become an illegal immigrant in Mexico. The same rules do not apply there. But of course, it's only real justice if it's done here, not in Mexico. And an article from Paul Craig Roberts about what's going on continually in the Ukraine, opening the gates to World War III. Of course, we just had Paul Craig Roberts on at the end of last week. This is an interesting story, too, as we're going down the news here out of the UK. Liberals are calling now for knife control after getting all the guns from everybody in the UK. They've noticed that, hey, now people are being killed with knives. And of course, they get all the knives. It will be hammers or whatever. They have a new motto. They say, save a life, surrender your knife. In other words, you're the dangerous person. Evidently, you are a potential killer. And as this person who had the article here, this is EagleRising.com, pointed this out, he says, why not go to the local prison and see how well knife control works? That's right. You go into a prison and they make their own knives, the shivs. So I guess maybe we could have another slogan. When you go to prison, want to live? Make a shiv. You know, you have to have a way to protect yourself. And that's really the issue. You're always going to have violent criminal people. The question is, how do you protect yourself? That's the issue about guns, about firearms, about the right of a human being to protect yourself. You know, we talked last week to the 90-year-old individual who's gone up against the police multiple times in order to feed the homeless. I really, really appreciate what he's done there. But in the course of the conversation, he came out, it came out that he was a former police commissioner. And he says, you know, we got to get over. And he started going off on self-defense because, I guess, of the Trayvon Martin situation. But, you know, that's just it. Self-defense is self-defense. You have a jury decide if somebody acted in legitimate self-defense or if they were the aggressor. We have to be able to make that determination, not just say nobody is going to have the means to defend themselves. So, you know, that's a situation that needs to be decided on a case-by-case basis. And, of course, that's what's happening now in the grand jury investigation in Ferguson. And we're going to be talking to Jakari Jackson and Joe Biggs later in the program. And we're also going to talk about what a grand jury is, why they're using the grand jury. And we're going to talk about some of the issues there as well as the epidemic of police violence. But right now, I want to go to this story that, again, it's a story up on Infowars.com right now. It's a top story. The site, court rules violent raid against homeschoolers is unconstitutional. The family was tased, assaulted, and pepper sprayed. But not only did they win this state court, saying that the action of the SWAT team and CPS was unconstitutional, no, they are now going on the offensive. They are suing this jurisdiction. And let me read you from an article here. The DC Clothesline goes through it and lays down exactly what happened in this encounter. And, of course, it was just last week that they filed a lawsuit. Looks like they may win this lawsuit if the court slapped down these police and CPS for what they did. Very critical of what they did. But let me read to you first what it was that they did. The agents were sent to the home, CPS agents, because these people were homeschooling their children and reportedly had a, quote, messy house. They had a messy house, so they get a visitation from CPS. The family had been harassed by CPS agents on multiple occasions, and on this particular day, they refused to let the agents inside the home. The father said they were not allowed to enter the property without a court order. Nevertheless, one of the sheriff's deputies responded by forcing his way into the home and spraying the father and mother in the face with pepper spray. Next, he used his taser on the father, shooting him in the back with a weapon. Horrified, the mother shut the door to separate herself and her husband from the officer, who then triggered the taser three more times through the closed door, as the barbs were still stuck inside the husband. Then the second officer helped the first officer, who's tasered these people, force open the door, found both the couple lying on the floor in pain. The officers then pepper sprayed the couple as they laid on the floor. With the couple subdued, the officers then turned to the family dog. There we go, puppy side. They didn't shoot it, however. They just sprayed it with a chemical agent, then threatened to shoot it if it did not stop barking. At the end of the raid, the couple was arrested. Both of them were charged with resisting arrest and child endangerment. They then took their children away from them for quite some time. Now, let me read you. That's the basis of the lawsuit. Let me read you what the court in Missouri said. Again, this is in Missouri, like Ferguson. But this is not a Missouri issue. This is a national issue. And this is not a black thing. These people, I don't know if they were black, but I don't think they were black. This is a blue thing. This is the police not under control with rules of engagement, not following the law. And that's what a court said in Missouri. A court in Missouri has ruled a raid staged against a homeschooling family in 2011 violated their constitutional rights. And Kurt Nemo points out in this article on Infowars.com that they lost custody of their children for months after this raid. The children were traumatized by witnessing the police assault on their parents. The court has now ruled the raid was unconstitutional. Here's the quote from the court. They said, the court will not allow an exception to sanction warrantless entry into a private residence by pepper spray and taser. If the officer had a warrant in hand and such force was necessary, that's a different story. But those are not the facts of this case. And unfortunately, they are not the facts of many, many, many cases. They go on to write, the Fourth Amendment strikes a carefully crafted balance between a family's right to privacy and the government's need to enforce the law. Now, they were defended by the Homeschool Legal Defense Association. If you are homeschooling and you do not have contact with the Homeschool Legal Defense Association, you need to support them. They are a very useful advocate if you ever come into a situation like this. They went on to say, the rule applies to all government agents, the Homeschool Legal Defense Association says. Court after court has agreed There is no social services exception to the Fourth Amendment. And they also cited a law professor at Duke University who wrote a treatise, Storming the Castle to Save the Children, The Ironic Costs of Child Welfare Exception to the Fourth Amendment. She said, violent police raids can shatter the innocence of even the youngest of children, causing a broad range of emotional responses, including trauma, anxiety, fear, shame, guilt, stigmatization, powerlessness, self-doubt, depression, and isolation. You know, we've seen this happen. We talked about this last week. As I said, this is not a black thing. This is a blue thing. We need to get control of law enforcement. And again, this kind of action we've seen sanctioned and approved over and over again because of the explosion of SWAT team raids. As we talked about last week in Frank Serpico's op-ed piece that he wrote for Politico last month, he pointed out that in his day, the real issue was corruption within the police force. Now it is an epidemic of violence within the police force. And I would suggest that both of those things have come from drug prohibition. We've had many times James Gearock from the police and prosecutors who are against prohibition, LEAP, it's Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, is actually the organization. We've had him on many times talking about how prohibition corrupts, and we've all seen it with the movies, with the newsreels, with the documentaries about alcohol prohibition. We know how that created a black market monopoly for organized crime, how it corrupted law enforcement and government. We have seen the same thing happen in our country with drug prohibition. The difference is that drug prohibition has been allowed to run its course now for multiple decades. And it's this kind of violence that is now being directed against many of the people who would never have thought about drugs, but would have approved this kind of violent reaction from the government to try to interdict drugs. We need to understand that the solution to everything is not government, and it's not government violence. We'll be right back. We're going to cover Ferguson. We're going to have our reporters in Ferguson, and we're going to have Paul Joseph Watson joining us in the next hour. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight on this Monday, November 24th, 2014. I'll be your host today. We'll have Paul Joseph Watson joining us from the UK in the second hour. Our reporters, Jakari Jackson and Joe Biggs, joining us from Ferguson, Missouri in the third hour or earlier if there's an announcement from the grand jury. Now, before we get back to the news, I want to let you know about our newsletter. Many of you may not be aware of our new newsletter. You know, every day we see attempts to censor and control the internet. Of course, the FCC is working to control the internet. They're working to control its content. We've seen CISPA and SOPA, ACTA, PIPA, many different legislative approaches that have been put forward and have been rejected because of the people getting involved and the population saying we don't want our internet content controlled. Yet they're going to bring that back. They're going to push that through with the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the Transatlantic Partnerships, these trade agreements that are being negotiated. They're going to do that in the back door, just as Obama said, could not get his agenda through legislatively, so he just does it by decree. They're also going to do internet control by decree, by a secretly negotiated treaty. So every day we see Infowars.com being blocked around the world, but there's one way that you can make sure that you can get the information, and that is subscribing to our new newsletter. You can escape the internet censorship right now. You can get the latest in breaking news, exclusive behind-the-scenes videos, daily stories that are not available on Infowars.com and are only viewable by newsletter subscribers. It's free. And this week, we are launching some very huge specials on InfoWars gear, InfoWars life, that are entirely unprecedented. Only newsletter subscribers will be given advanced notice 24 hours beforehand. Now, you can subscribe to this, as they're showing if you're watching this right now, the video feed. You can subscribe to InfoWars Underground Insider right now on the homepage, on the sidebar at InfoWars.com, or visit InfoWars.com/newsletter to get the exclusive daily content and today's behind-the-scenes video, as well as check out our previous exclusive newsletter content. Now, just before the break, we were talking about this particularly egregious case, although, you know, it's not isolated, unfortunately. We see SWAT team raids coming in, throwing flashbang grenades into the cribs of children because they haven't done their research, their due diligence. Many cases, we see SWAT team raids being conducted that have not gotten the proper paperwork. But even if they have the proper paperwork, do we really want to have these no-knock raids? Do we really want to allow officers to go to a home where a family has been accused of having a messy house? Do we really want them to go and harass people? And then when they're told, get a search warrant if you want to come back and harass me again, they bust through the door, they taser the mother and father, they pepper spray the mother and father, they pepper spray the dog, threaten to shoot the dog. Do we really want to live in that kind of a country? See, it's not just black people, it's not just homeschoolers. You could be walking down the street and somebody, or you could be in a store and somebody could finger you. There's a, of course, a movement now in the case that was in Ohio, in the Walmart, I believe it was in Ohio, the fellow who was, let's see, I'm looking at the newsletter here. Nevertheless, it's a story, yes, Ohio. The story where, if you remember, back in August, we covered it here at Infowars.com, the man who was going through Walmart, he was shopping for gifts. He'd picked up a toy BB gun. He was on the phone with his wife, talking to her, and she hears the incident happen. Somebody in the store had called 911 and said, there's a man threatening people with a gun. Now, subsequent video footage showed that was absolutely a lie. Nevertheless, the police showed up, shot him dead. The wife, who's listening to the phone call, hears the police say, get down on the ground, and shots go out. And then he's down on the ground because they didn't wait for him to even comply. So when we look at that happening in a Walmart, when we look at that happening to these homeschoolers, we look at a lot of these different things that are happening on a daily basis. We see in Utah, the killings by the Utah police are outpacing gang, drug, child abuse, homicides. In this article from the Salt Lake City Tribune, they say over the past 5 years, more Utahns have been killed by police than by gang members or by drug dealers or from child abuse. So far this year, deadly force by the police has claimed more lives, 13, including a Saturday shooting in South Jordan. They've claimed more lives by the police shootings than has violence between spouses and dating partners. As the tally of fatal police shootings rises, law enforcement watchdogs say it's time to treat deadly force as a potentially serious public safety problem. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to cover what's going on with the grand jury. How is it being used here? What is a grand jury? How is it different from a regular jury? You need to understand what the law is, especially what juries do. You need to be enforcing your rights as a juror in jury nullification. But we're going to talk about what a grand jury is when we come back. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
He aligns himself with the truth. And it's time for you to choose a side. You're listening to Alex Jones.
Chaos is hanging around. From tree to the ground.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm your host today, David Knight. We're going to be joined by Paul Joseph Watson in the second hour. Our reporters in Ferguson, Jakari Jackson and Joe Biggs, will be joining us in the third hour, if not earlier. If there's a grand jury announcement, we'll be going to them when that happens to gauge the reaction of the crowd there. They've been covering and live streaming from that area throughout the week. And, of course, earlier in the week, we were told that, for the most part, the police were much more professional than they have been in the past, better trained. However, there was one incident that Joe Biggs reported where they were telling people not to get into the street, that they would be arrested if they got into the street. Meanwhile, there were some police who went around behind the crowd and essentially forced them into the street. I don't know if that was the case or if that was tied to this article that's up on Infowars.com. Police in Ferguson violate court order by arresting a journalist. They arrested him. He says he was arrested for exercising his First Amendment rights on a public sidewalk. They say, no, he was in the street and they failed to disperse. So we asked them to leave the street. They refused. So we arrested him along with a lot of other people. However, it says in the story, we have multiple witnesses immediately came forward disputed the claim that he was in the street. They provided photos and videos showing that the reporter in question was merely taking photos from the sidewalk. So we're going to be talking to them in the third hour or earlier. Now, before we go back to the news, I wanted to let you know that Silver Bullet, our colloidal silver that we sell at InfoWarsLife.com, is now back in stock. Of course, it is always in a limited supply. It's very difficult and dangerous to make it in these kind of high concentrations. And once it runs out, it takes us about 6 weeks to get more in. These high concentrations are 30 parts per million. It's a pure base of deionized water. It is free of toxic artificial additives. There's never been a more important time to have powerful and clean form of colloidal silver within reach for you and your family. Go to InfoWarsLife.com to order your Silver Bullet now or call 888-253-3139. That's 888-253-3139. Now, just before the break, I said we'd talk a little bit about questions that people have raised about grand juries. We've been hearing so much about grand jury. What is a grand jury? Is it some high and exalted jury? The grand essentially talks about the number of people who are on the jury. It's quite a bit more than just the 12 that you typically have in a jury. But people are saying now that perhaps, and this is a lawyer for the family of Michael Brown, the 18-year-old that was shot by the police, they say that the grand jury process is different, and they believe that it is being applied unfairly. Well, what they're saying about this, they said, when you think about it, this prosecutor is saying that we're just going to be fair and we're not going to recommend any charges. And he says that's different than anything this prosecutor has done in the past 28 years that he's been working with grand juries. And he says, so are we now going to say that what he did all those years was unfair to all those people, and now he's going to start being fair, get extra fair with the police, give the police extra rights? Why can't we just have equal justice? And then he goes on to make another point of the reason that they're having a grand jury. He says there's a lot of high-profile cases. He says, I've seen them where prosecutors say, you know what, I'm going to hand this one over to the grand jury. I want political cover on this one. In other words, I don't want to take the responsibility for making the decision as to whether or not we're going to go forward with a prosecution and a trial or not. I'm going to punt. I'm going to say that it's going to be the grand jury's decision, not mine. I want them to decide, so I'm not the one who takes the heat on this decision. They believe that that is the situation that's going on here in this case. Now, that was an article from ABC News. Looking at how a grand jury works, according to finelaw.com, it says, while all states have provisions in their laws that allow for grand juries, about half of the states don't actually use them because there's other things you can do. You can have a preliminary hearing prior to a criminal trial. There's a lot of different things. They're just looking to see if there's enough evidence, strong enough evidence, or even a probable cause to do an indictment. And typically, as people have said, you can get a grand jury to indict a ham sandwich. It's something that the prosecutor runs. They say, unlike a grand jury, a preliminary hearing is usually open to the public and involves lawyers and a judge. Not so with grand juries. In other words, a grand jury is kind of a closed, secretive thing. As we've seen, there's been no news coming out as to what the grand jury is being told, what they're going to do. It is something that is a completely closed, not a transparent system like a jury trial. They say that there's not a judge, it's just a lawyer, a prosecutor. It's not a judge with an adversarial situation here. So it's very different than a real jury trial. And it's a closed process. They say there is no judge present. There's no lawyers typically except for the prosecutor. So it's basically a captive situation. In order to get an indictment, they typically need a supermajority, two-thirds or three-quarters of the grand jury to indict. In other words, they don't need a unanimous decision, but they do need a majority to do an indictment. They say even though a grand jury may not choose to indict, a prosecutor can still bring the defendant to trial if they think they have a strong enough case. So they don't even need to have the grand jury indict. They can still indict them themselves. So I think that underscores the fact that this is really more than anything to provide political cover for this prosecutor who has been operating for 28 years and is now doing this quite a bit differently than he's done in the past. They say he's presenting a lot of evidence. He's announced that he's going to give them all the evidence that he has. The problem is, that's fine. The problem is that it's a closed, secretive process. You can't hear what the prosecutor is telling them. There's no adversary in this process. There's no judge who is refereeing between the prosecution and the defense. So that's not really, I think, what needs to be done in order to bring this down, because there's a lot of questions about what happened with this. And we need to start asking questions about the rules of engagement. As Paul Joseph Watson said when he was on last week, they always focus on these cases that are not clear-cut. Because we've heard now, and we've heard testimony, we even heard, it's not just testimony from the police. We actually had recordings that surfaced from people who were talking to other people that were observers there, talking about how he rushed the police officer. Nevertheless, a jury should be deciding whether or not the response was reasonable or not. Was it necessary for him to fire that many shots? Could he have stopped him with one or two? Should they have called the medical ambulance sooner or not? Now, of course, we've seen different narratives as to whether or not he got help quickly or not. All of that needs to be done in the open. It needs to be done in an open jury trial with both sides being argued. I think that's the only way they're going to pull this down. But that's a case where there's a lot of ambiguity as to who's guilty or not. I believe it should be done in an open trial, but there are many cases, just as the one we talked about this weekend, where the man, the black man, was shot in the stairwell by two officers who were doing a patrol on a project. Basically, the man was walking with his longtime girlfriend. The two officers enter the stairwell. One of them pulls out a gun without warning, fires, and kills the man with one shot in the chest. They did not even bother to call an ambulance. And the police chief in New York City has said that the man had not committed a crime. The man was not armed. In other words, he said everything except my police officer killed a man. He would not make that admission. And, of course, that's something that still has to play out in the courts. There should be an investigation of that. Look at the case that was in Ohio at the Beaver Creek Walmart that we reported on back in August, about the Walmart shopper who was shot dead by cops after picking up a BB gun. And also an innocent bystander was literally scared to death, died of a heart attack after the shooting. This is what the man's wife said. She said, we were just talking. He said he was at the video games playing videos, and he went over there by the toy section where the toy guns were. The next thing I know, he said, it's not real. And the police start shooting. And then they said, get on the ground. But he was already on the ground, because they had just shot him dead. These are the kind of cases that we need to be rallying behind. But instead, they choose an ambiguous case that I believe the Obama administration wanted to make into a national case. The mainstream media who supports them wanted to make it into a national case because they wanted to play the race card before the election. But they certainly should get behind these unambiguous cases. Use it to talk about how we set the rules of engagement for the police, what the penalties are going to be when they don't follow those rules of engagement. Let's ask them, you know, if is it okay for the police to shoot you if you attack them without a weapon? What about if you're running away without attacking the police? Can they still shoot you? How about if you refuse an order? No matter how arbitrary that order, can the police still shoot us? What if we talk back, yell at them, shoot a bird at them? Can they pull out a gun and shoot us? What if we give the officer a dirty look? What if we're photographing the officer? Are they allowed to shoot us in all those cases? What if we're walking in a stairway with our arm around a girl? Are they allowed to shoot us then? We need to have these discussions, you know, and then we need to say, can they shoot us until they run out of ammunition? How many times do they shoot? Frank Serpico said in his day they would take two shots and then reassess the situation. Now they just empty the gun until they run out of ammunition. Do they have some additional liability if they don't call for an ambulance, if they just let you bleed out on the ground? Is there going to be criminal liability for people who call 911 as a snitch? We remember just this last weekend we had a 12-year-old who died again with a BB gun. A person called the police and said there was a kid with a gun. It said multiple times it was probably fake. That was not conveyed to the officers on the scene, they say, by the 911 operator. Nevertheless, why would a person call 911 if they think it was probably fake and if they say it multiple times? Or look at the situation that I just mentioned in the Walmart where the man had the BB gun that he was buying in Walmart and he was shot dead by the police. It was The person who called the 911 dispatcher is named Ronald Ritchie. And he said that this man, whose name is Crawford, was pointing the gun at children. And then he repeated that claim, told it to the press. But then they looked at the surveillance video, and that wasn't true. He wasn't threatening anybody, even with a Walmart BB gun. So what is the liability for somebody who acts like a snitch, who wants to call 911 regardless of what they say? You know, what is feeding these people? Is this see something, say something? Do they want to be good little informants who are going to get a pat on the head from Homeland Security? I mean, why would somebody do something like this? We have some real serious problems in this society, and it isn't limited just to the police. We have a lot of people who are apathetic. We have a lot of people like this guy, Ronald Ritchie, who are so eager to call the police. We need to talk about this. We need to set up some rules of engagement. But of course, when it comes to Ferguson, it is all about race and race only. Now, people are doing something about this in the Ohio situation, the man who was shot in Walmart. Anonymous has really taken up this case. And we have a picture of this article here from countercurrentnews.com. A lot of anonymous protesters. Now, there's been a lot of protests. There's been protests from people with Ohio Open Carry. The Ohio Student Association has protested many times. But they say that each of these times, Anonymous was there and is getting larger and larger. And of course, Anonymous has also put out, I think, a pretty good manifesto about what this problem is and laying it out in this particular situation. They said, it's come to our attention, the cold-blooded murder of a 22-year-old John Crawford. Due to video evidence released by Walmart, we will now begin Op John Crawford. Our demands are simple. Fire and or disarm Officer Sean Williams. Yes, if he's going to continue in the police force, let him continue in the police force without a gun. That used to be quite common in America. It still is done in Alaska, where they pride themselves on de-escalating situations and talking to people rather than shooting people. They say, if he's going to remain, disarm him, bring criminal charges against 911 caller Ronald Ritchie, who essentially started this and got the guy killed. Publicly apologize to John Crawford's family. These demands must be met, or we will take steps to ensure justice will be served. We have already taken down Beaver Creek's main site for hosting information about the police. We will leak any and all information about all police officers of Beaver Creek and government officials. A message to the Beaver Creek government. You have caused this by your ignorance and not responding to the murder of an innocent man. We will target any and all sites that you support. Now, that's Anonymous's way of dealing with it. We need to have other people get involved as well. There are other things that can be done other than targeting their internet sites. We need to have community leaders who are going to stand up to Obama's decrees. They're going to stand up to the police who are going over their rules of engagement. You know, we talked about these homeschoolers who were basically one in a court in Missouri that ruled that their constitutional rights were violated. Now they are suing that area. You know, the problem is they're going to sue that police force. They're going to sue that municipality. And guess who's going to pay for it? It's going to be the taxpayers, of course. And in a sense, I guess they are responsible if they don't reform their government. If we are going to sit by and apathetically allow this to happen again and again without any reformation, I guess we should be hit with multi-million dollar compensation lawsuits. I believe that one of the things that needs to be done to get this in control is to take that money out of the police department, make individuals liable. If they're found guilty of criminal action, they should not be able to hide behind a uniform. We need to treat them the same way that we treat other people. So there's a lot of different places where we could be making these kinds of important reforms, but instead they push us into a racist narrative. And we're going to be talking to Paul Joseph Watson. He has a article that's up on Infowars.com today. Democrats in North Carolina have approved reparations for descendants of black victims from the 1898 Wilmington race riot. That's 1898, 116 years ago. There is nobody alive But of course, that is merely pandering to the base, trying to tell them that even though they just stuck the knife in their back and twisted it with this amnesty decree, stuck the knife in the back of minorities, blue-collar workers, low-wage job people, the backbone of the Democrat Party, even though they have been betrayed by Obama, they want to show they still care about them by trying to get them money from a 116-year-old incident. So we're going to talk to Paul Joseph Watson about that. And I want to talk to him also about this scandal that is continuing to unfold in the UK. MPs in Westminster, part of a pedophile ring, were untouchable, claims a former special branch officer. They say there was significant pedophile groups in Parliament who were untouchable to the police. This is something that happened 30 years ago. A former Scotland Yard detective has come forward to tell detectives in the Metropolitan Police Service's pedophile unit that Scotland Yard was aware of a group in Parliament who sexually abused children over 30 years ago. Now, as we had up last week on InfoWars, we had an article there from Liberty Blitzkrieg, and actually he put a number on that. And we're going to continue talking about this, as well as one other thing we're going to talk to Paul Joseph Watson about, and that is the implementation, essentially, of the Scottish law following people from birth to the age of 21. Now they're trying to piggyback that onto the Sandy Hook shooting. We'll be right back with that information. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight. On this Monday, November 24th, we were just talking about this breaking scandal in the UK. Actually, it's a 30-year-old scandal. The well-connected politicians, the MPs in Westminster, that's essentially like our Capitol Hill, they were untouchable, according to a former Scotland Yard detective. Several have come forward. We had this story up last week from Liberty Blitzkrieg by Michael Krieger. He says, I've long written about how the percentage of sociopaths within a group of humans becomes increasingly concentrated the higher you climb within the positions of power in a society, with it being chronic amongst those who crave political power the most. Now, he points out in some quotes here, he says that the files contained the name of 16 MPs said to be involved and another 40 who were supporting the goals of the pedophile information exchange, which sought to reduce the age of consent. You understand that? Remember the North American Man-Boy Love Association? They actually, in England, that was in America, in England they had what they called the pedophile information exchange, PIE. Pie, yeah. And it turns out that in a story from The Guardian, they have gone back and uncovered lobbying by a pedophile campaign. Now, this story from The Guardian, they essentially link a civil liberties organization to this pedophile organization. They say the members' hotline for the pedophile information exchange rang of all places inside the Home Office. That's the, and I'm not sure exactly, I'll have to talk to Paul about what that is, if that's the, where the Home Office is, exactly which branch of government that is. But the phone would be picked up by Stephen Smith, a pedophile and a member of the group who worked in security in Whitehall, from where he would tell callers where to go to the next meeting to discuss issues, including decriminalizing sex with children as young as four. See, this is how intricately it was linked. This is The Guardian reporting this. Now, they're talking to the lady who provided them cover, Harriet Harman. She was a Labour deputy leader back in 1978 to 1982. They have tried to distance themselves from it. Nevertheless, this organization that they were part of, the NCCL, it's a civil liberties group, was tied, according to archive documents, according to The Guardian's research. They say archive documents appear to show how the pedophile group managed to influence policy at the civil liberties group, despite being run by people who believed in their right to have sex with young children. See, it's kind of interesting, isn't it, that we're sold abortion as being a right to privacy by a government that doesn't believe that we have privacy in any area of our lives, by a political party that has embraced that lack of privacy in all matters. We're not allowed to make decisions about our children's education or in many, many decisions about our children's education. According to these people, they want to force everybody into the schools that they control, the schools that they run. They want to stop homeschooling. But yet, in the name of privacy, you're allowed to kill your child, just like in the name of civil liberty, you are allowed to have sex with young children, according to this civil liberties group in the UK. That's how they disguise this stuff. Now, we just had a report that came out of Sandy Hook, came out of Connecticut. Based on the Sandy Hook shootings now, they're trying to extend the same kind of control that we've seen extended just this last year in Scotland, following people from the age of birth to the age of 21. Now, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Department of Education has announced that they have $160 million to spread around this country to make this policy work. Stay with us after the break. We're going to talk about that. And we're also going to have Paul Joseph Watson joining us in the next hour to talk about this and the other articles we just went over. We'll be right back.
Big Brother. Mainstream media. Government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight on this Monday, November 24th, 2014. Paul Joseph Watson is going to be joining us in the next segment, and I'm going to hold off on this Sandy Hook Elementary School report of the Office of the Child Advocate, where they're trying to extend the government into the lives of our children, into the lives of our family. They're going to use $160 million in funding from the federal government to make it happen. I'm going to read you some of their goals and what their agenda is, and we're going to talk about that with Paul Joseph Watson, along with this breaking story in the UK about how the government that is always acting in our children's best interest or acting in the name of national security, because that was the way they protected the pedophile politicians, they said, you need to stand down. You can't report this in the press. This is a matter of national security. So they always invoke national security. They always invoke the welfare of the children when it is really the children in this particular case, in this Sandy Hook report, they're after our children at an early age. They do not want us to have private decisions that we're going to make about our families. They want to intrude themselves into our families. But let's go through the news in this segment, because we have a lot of our affiliates are doing a news break at this particular part of the program. Again, on Infowars.com, we have police in Ferguson violating a court order by arresting a journalist. They say that he was in the street. Nevertheless, we see pictures that have surfaced showing that he was filming it on the sidewalk. And we have testimony from people who are there. We also see a Ferguson mob marching in St. Louis City, shuts down a highway. A reporter is hit in the head. We have Paul Craig Roberts' story, opening the gates to World War III. Of course, Paul Craig Roberts was on the show with us at the end of last week. He says in this article, a Russian foreign ministry official condemned Washington's reckless decision to supply weapons to Kiev as a violation of an agreement that would make a political resolution of the conflict less likely. Sounds very much like the kind of namby-pamby statements we're hearing from the GOP. Paul Craig Roberts says this statement is perplexing. It implies the Russian government has not yet figured out that Washington has no interest in resolving this conflict. Washington's purpose is to use the hapless Ukrainians against Russia. The worse the conflict becomes, the happier Washington is. Now, of course, they understand that, I believe. Certainly Putin does. He's making massive overtures to China. The direct trade between Russia and China, circumventing the U.S. petrodollar, has increased by eightfold in just the last year. There are new energy deals that are being struck. They are trying to do an end run around the U.S. petrodollar, which is essentially the thing that kept the fiat currency from our Federal Reserve from imploding its wealth as they took us off the gold. Any tying to a gold standard, they essentially kind of backed it up with oil. Now, if these countries, if Brazil, Russia, India, China, the BRICS, if they start moving away from the petrodollar, start dealing directly in their own currencies, that will not only undermine our currency, but greatly undermine our economy. We have the Texas governor-elect, Governor Abbott, who was the attorney general. plans a new lawsuit against Obama. He says the president is unconstrained by the Constitution. He went on the Fox News Sunday with Chris Wallace. They asked him, he's been attorney general here in Texas, why he has sued the president so many times. He said, because this president, more than any other, has abdicated his responsibility to uphold and enforce the Constitution. We have a president who feels completely unconstrained by the Constitution. He says he's had reasonable success. I think he has sued them somewhere in this article. It said over 30 times. So he's going to do that yet again. Clearly, I do not agree that a lawsuit against Clinton is the rightful thing for Boehner to do, however. He has other remedies that he refuses to do because it's not in his naked self-interest politically to do that. He's going to take some political heat if he impeaches Obama. But Obama has done many, many, many things to be impeached for. They're going to allow him a free pass because they want the power when they get involved and because it's policies that they agree with. We're going to be right back with Paul Joseph Watson from the UK. Stay with us.
He's the T-Rex of political talk. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
Back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight in Austin. Joining us now is Paul Joseph Watson from the UK, and we have a story that Paul just put up on the Infowars.com site. Guccifer says, Pennsylvania city to be nuked next year. Top hacker has archive of unreleased emails from military and intelligence officials. Paul, welcome.
Good to be here, David.
Fill us in on what the latest revelation from Guccifer is. Is this something else from the New York Times? Because they interviewed him in prison about a week or 2 weeks ago. And at that time, he had talked about possibly a false flag nuclear event in Chicago. Now, is this another article that they've gone, that they've released some additional information?
That's right, yeah. It's from the original interview with the Romanian hacker Guccifer, who is in a Romanian prison right now. And basically, it's some information that was unreleased in the first New York Times article. So the New York Times came out and said that he gave them a manifesto, which was a precondition to do the interview. But they didn't reprint any of the information contained in Guccifer's manifesto. They only referred to the fact that he mentioned the potential for a nuke attack in Chicago in 2015. Now, in this second article, they also acknowledge that Guccifer said there was also a target, a plan for a nuclear attack in a Pennsylvanian city also next year. And why this matters is because Guccifer hacked the emails of top military, intelligence, and political professionals. He hacked the emails of the Bush family, the Rockefeller family, members of the Council on Foreign Relations, former Clinton aides, FBI officials, Federal Reserve officials. So he hacked these emails. He got this information. Colin Powell as well.
Yeah, actually, people remember. If people remember, there were those pictures that we had, the articles at the time. You can go back and see them on our archives at Infowars.com. He got pictures of George Bush where he was essentially painting his feet in the bathtub and things like that. So they were intricate emails. He revealed an extramarital affair with Colin Powell. He had an email that was going back and forth between George Shultz and Colin Powell and others saying, we need to get Henry Kissinger to put pressure on Tony Blair to come to Bohemian Grove. You got to impress upon him that this is really important. These emails were going back and forth by the guy who is now head of the Rupert Murdoch news empire. So he got into some really deep stuff, and they tried to downplay this in the last article. I haven't seen this newest one that you're reporting on, but in the first article, they tried to downplay it and say, oh, he's just trying to put a political spin on this. He was really just eavesdropping on pretty girls, and yet there was a lot of government emails that he infiltrated, wasn't there?
Exactly, and the big point here is He says that he has another treasure trove of emails that he hasn't publicly released. Many of them have been released on cryptome.org, but in this new New York Times article, they reveal that he's got a bigger archive that he has stashed away in the cloud for safekeeping and perhaps for use as a bargaining chip with the American authorities. Mm. So maybe he's using this as a threat to try and lessen his 7-year prison sentence and get out of jail sooner. But in this latest article, he's now talking about a Pennsylvanian city. And again, this isn't just some random person on the internet. Right. This is somebody who's had direct access to the emails of top military and intelligence professionals. Mm-hmm. So that's why it's at least of interest. The New York Times didn't find it of any interest. They just said it was a conspiracy-laden rant about the Illuminati. And he actually had a psychological evaluation, Guccifer, otherwise known as Mr. Lazar. And they found that he was completely sane. He wasn't prone to delusions or anything like that. So, you know, we're merely taking this and highlighting it and saying this is interesting that this top hacker who had access to all these military and intelligence political emails is now saying that Pennsylvania could be a target for a nuclear attack next year after saying that Chicago could also be in the crosshairs. And even if it's, you know, not some kind of staged attack, we know that ISIS have put out propaganda where they directly name buildings in Chicago that they plan to attack. Mm-hmm. So this has already been out there previously.
It sure would be interesting to talk to this guy before he gets killed by these people, because he talked about, and they were laughing about it in the New York Times, talked about the Illuminati and these elite people who were manipulating things. And yet you look at the emails going back and forth about Bohemian Grove, and you look at this guy, Andrew Knight, who at the time was the number two under Rupert Murdoch, now has essentially assumed control of the newspapers there. Somebody who has long ties as the CEO of conservative British press organizations and mainstream editor. He's there trying to get Tony Blair to Bohemian Grove and writing Colin Powell and saying, you know, put pressure on him from Henry Kissinger. We need to get him there. I mean, there is something going on that he has seen the inside of it, just like Alex Jones saw the inside of it when he snuck in there and took the pictures. I really would like to get that detailed information from him, but he's hopefully he's leveraging this to keep himself safe in prison.
Well, yeah, the point about Bohemian Grove, the email which was sent to Colin Powell encouraging Tony Blair to attend Bohemian Grove in 2012, is it again demolishes the myth that Bohemian Grove is either just a talking shop or a summer camp.
Right.
Because he's very insistent that Blair go there, because obviously it's important in terms of influence, networking, making connections, and coming to major decisions. We know that the Manhattan Project was crafted at Bohemian Grove, so major mm-hmm. geopolitical global decisions take place there. And these Gucci for hacked emails are another illustration of that.
Yeah, he evidently was reluctant to go. Maybe, you know, he'd heard of the homosexual reputation of the place. And they were saying, you have to impress upon him how imperative that it is that he clear his calendar and get to this. You know, this is George Shultz and Colin Powell and Henry Kissinger. You know, all you guys lean on him to get him there, because this is imperative that he get there. So this is not just some kind of, you know, partying weekend. This is something where they really have to get him involved. It is not just kind of a relaxing weekend as they'd like to portray it. Was there anything else that you wanted to cover from the Guccifer release? Has the New York Times talked about anything in terms of which city it might be, or did they mention anything other than a city in Pennsylvania possibly being up for a nuclear attack?
They just mentioned Pennsylvania. Obviously, you would assume that it's Pittsburgh or Philadelphia. Those, as far as I know, are the two biggest cities in Pennsylvania. So, mm-hmm. I mean, we'll keep track of it. The other thing on the email that Colin Powell received, it said, quote, lack of exposure suggests that Tony has not yet got his priorities straight.
Exactly.
So they're quite candid. This is not just a suggestion to invite him to a party. This is a very candid and forceful recommendation that Colin Powell put pressure on Tony Blair to attend Bohemian Grove. So these emails have already proven very interesting. And as he said, Guccifer has another stash that he's yet to release. He's using it as a bargaining chip with the U.S. government. So we'll continue to track the story.
Wow. Let's go to this other article that you've got up on Infowars.com today. Dems approve reparations for descendants of blacks victimized by 1898 Wilmington race riot, 116-year-old incident. They want to have white-owned businesses, they say, are still profiting from that. They want them to pay money to black descendants of the victims. Talk about that, Paul.
Yeah, I mean, well, I didn't even know what this incident was until I researched it this morning, but this was an overthrow of the government there in North Carolina, as you said, 116 years ago, during which at least dozens, up to 60 black people were killed by white supremacists from the Democratic Party. Over 1,000 of them were driven out of the area, and Wilmington became a majority white area, having previously been a majority black area. So this is an incident that's, you know, there's a memorial for it. It's a historical incident. It was a massacre. It was a what they call an insurrection. Mm-hmm. But now, after pressure from one resident in particular in Wilmington, the North Carolina Democratic Party introduced this resolution. It's not passed. It's introduced as a resolution. But if taken up, it will be formed into a bill and introduced to the General Assembly for debate. So it could be a piece of legislation soon. And as he said, it basically says that black people in Wilmington who are descendants of individuals killed during that insurrection should receive compensation or reparations as a result of an incident which happened 116 years ago.
Yeah.
Which the business owners there now have absolutely nothing to do with, whether they're white or black.
That's
but
right.
Obviously the taxpayers would be the ones paying for it.
This is political grandstanding by the North Carolina Democrat Party. There's absolutely no chance that this is going to get passed through the legislature, and it shouldn't get passed through the legislature. As you just said, this is something that nobody alive is responsible for or should have to be taxed for or should have to pay for this. It's interesting, Paul, that in North Carolina, of course, there's been a lot of talk going back to the 2012 elections about how many people they have on the voter registration rolls there that are over 100. I mean, there's several thousand people that they have over the age of 100 still on their voter registration rolls because they don't ever purge them, which opens the door to fraud. And, of course, they've got a lot of 112-year-olds. So I guess maybe they're looking at the voter registration rolls and thinking that maybe there are some of these guys still alive. But I don't think in reality that's the case. I think really, Paul, what's behind this is that they want to try to show themselves. They want to play the race card because they really don't have anything else left. They've been a total failure in their policies there, and they have just betrayed their base there, blue-collar workers, minorities, people at the low end of the scale who have always been the reliable base of the Democrat Party throughout my lifetime. Those people have really been betrayed by Obama's amnesty decree, and I think they're just trying to get those people back into the fold, show them that they still care about them, playing the race card. We've got to go to commercial break, Paul, but we're going to be right back with Paul Joseph Watson from the UK. Stay with us.
Live with David Knight on the Alex Jones Show, and we've just got silver bullet, colloidal silver, back in stock. Could run out very soon. It could take at least 6 more weeks to get more in. This is something I often read about on the emails on Infowars.com. People raving about the effects of colloidal silver, silver bullet, available at InfowarsLife.com. Vital supplement for maintaining a healthy lifestyle. There's never been a more important time to have this powerful and clean form of colloidal silver within reach for you and your family. It's Silver Bullet Colloidal Silver, available at InfowarsLife.com. David Knight.
Hey, Paul. Yes, I wanted to get your take. I talked about this earlier in the last hour. We have this breaking pedophile scandal that's in Great Britain involving MPs, Westminster. And I wanted to get your take on this. We talked about it briefly last week, and as this gradually unfolds, I think we're now 30 years away from when this was happening. I think some people have died. Some people are getting fairly old, and they want to kind of clear the air here, I think, clear their consciences. So now this is starting to come out. There was an article that was referenced as part of this reporting going back to February of this year on The Guardian, talking about lobbying by a pedophile campaign, a group called the Pedophile Information Exchange. They say that when people called that hotline for the Pedophile Information Exchange, the phone rang inside the Home Office. Tell us what the Home Office is there in the UK.
The Home Office is basically the section of government that deals with domestic issues related to corruption and criminal investigations within the United Kingdom, as well as immigration matters. But this is shocking. I mean, we have stories about MPs in Britain. This is back in the 80s, and you can bet that some of this is still going on now.
Oh, yeah.
They were caught, basically, other MPs reported on them abducting children, taking them to these houses, raping them, strangling them. And in three cases, according to one eyewitness, they killed these boys. So absolutely sickening. But the key point about it, as you just alluded to, is the Metropolitan Police, who took statements at the time from witnesses, who took the information from the other MPs who were reporting this, said that the group involved in abusing and killing these young boys was too powerful to bring to justice, mm-hmm. and that they couldn't investigate the paedophiles in Westminster, in government, abducting these children, sexually abusing them, and then, in some cases, killing them. Then on top of that, the newspapers, the media outlets that were set to report on this back in the 80s received D notices from the government, which means in the UK an order directly from the government not to report on this paedophile scandal because, in their words, it would harm national security.
Yeah.
And then even information about the D notices themselves were ordered destroyed or were destroyed by accident by MI5 and MI6, British intelligence. So the very information about the D notice itself was later destroyed. So this is an obvious cover-up. A link has now emerged to Jimmy Savile, the infamous entertainer and paedophile who abused hundreds of children, who himself is firmly tied in with the British establishment, or was before his death. So this only gets more sickening. It's the Westminster paedophile network, which is now being exposed. But again, every time they have an investigation into this, the head of it is always part of the establishment, and it goes nowhere, just as it did back in the 80s when police said that they couldn't investigate the group because it was too powerful to bring to justice.
Yeah, you're talking about the Savile situation. They've got pictures of him up here for people who don't know what this guy looks like or who he is. Of course, people here in this country don't know him very well, but they shut that down three different times. Higher ups at Scotland Yard shut down investigations. It surfaced when this, I think his case came out, year and a half, 2 years ago. There had been a lot of talk about that. A lot of people had mentioned that. David Icke had talked about it, but it really broke in earnest. They had the BBC, some people at the BBC did a documentary about that after he died, and that was shut down by the people at the top of the BBC. So you see the people at the top of their media, the BBC, you see people at the top of Scotland Yard shutting it down as people who were lower in the pecking order see this and want to go public with it. They're shut down, and that's the case that we see happening in so many places. We've seen that happen in the U.S., and of course there's been multiple cases of that have been exposed, that have come out, and yet nothing ever happens in the U.S. or in the U.K.
Well,
they never bring these people
to
justice.
Look at the Dutroux case in Belgium. As soon as links emerged to top judges, celebrities, politicians, the case got completely shut down. In every single country where these elite paedophile networks emerge, and it always leads to the elite, to bankers, judges, politicians, celebrities that are linked in with the establishment.
Absolutely.
The case gets shut down every time.
Well, we're out of time, Paul. Thank you for joining us. Paul Joseph Watson from the UK. We're going to take your calls at 800-259-9231. Tell us what you think.
We'll be right back. The Empire's on the run. Alex Jones and the GCN Radio Network. Resistance to tyrants is obedience to God. It's Alex Jones.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight in Austin. We were just talking to Paul Joseph Watson in the UK. We're going to be joining our reporters in Ferguson in the next hour, waiting the grand jury verdict there, and to see how the public is going to react, the protesters that are there. I'm going to go to callers, but before I do, I want to tell you about something we offer that's free, and that's our new newsletter, the InfoWars Underground Insider. Every day, we're seeing attempts to censor the internet with sites like InfoWars.com now blocked around the world because it doesn't fall in line with establishment propaganda viewpoints. From CISPA to SOPA, your ability to access real news is under attack, but you can escape internet censorship right now. Get the latest in breaking news, exclusive behind-the-scenes videos, daily stories that are not available on InfoWars.com that are only viewable by newsletter subscribers. This week, we are launching some very huge specials on InfoWars gear and InfoWars life that are entirely unprecedented and only available notification to newsletter subscribers. It'll be available to everybody, but they will be given advance notice 24 hours beforehand of when these specials are coming out. You can get that by subscribing to our newsletter, the InfoWars Underground Insider, right now on the homepage sidebar at InfoWars.com or visit InfoWars.com/newsletter. You get exclusive daily content and today's behind-the-scenes video, as well as checking out our previous exclusive newsletter content. So that's there. That's available to you. Let's go to some of our callers. We've got John in Texas. Looks like you wanted to talk about what Paul and I were just talking about, this breaking pedophile scandal in the UK. And of course, it's happened over and over again in the United States, the highest levels of government, in Belgium with the EU. Go ahead, John in Texas.
Hello, David.
Hi.
Hi. Yeah, I've been following this issue for quite some time, and I don't know that these people are ever going to be brought to justice, because it goes into the royal family as well with this Jimmy Savile character.
Yeah.
He used to procure boys for a former prime minister, Edward Heath, in the English Channel on the island of Jersey back in the day, and it's absolutely disgusting. There's over 100,000 children go missing in Britain every year,
yes.
And you never hear about it.
Yes,
it's never in the news. That's a substantial amount of missing kids.
Now, this is Scottish John. I recognize your voice. I love the promo that we've got.
That's correct, mate.
I want to get your take on this. You're a good one to talk to about this, because earlier this year, we had the law that was passed in Scotland that was going to assign a government minder to children from birth to 18 or 21. Now we're seeing that being proposed in the United States on the back of the Sandy Hook shooting. They're using that to push this through, and of course, they have $160 million in funding from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Department of Education to put this through. They're very concerned about this. They're using the fact that this young man was reportedly homeschooled by his mother, so they say, we need to be able to penetrate the family and have government minders. Give us your take on what's going on in Scotland and the irony that the government would be doing this for the children when we see at the highest levels of government they've used child protective services to abduct children for their own use.
Well, I've been aware of it, David, since it first broke, but it's not something I've paid a lot of attention to because you know, I'm long gone, far away, so it's of no great interest to me other than that, you know, it's just more government intrusion, let's be honest. I'm deeply saddened that the independence vote was lost for Scotland there recently, because I think a lot of things would have changed then. But, you know, the establishment doesn't, you know, they don't want this to happen, and they're gonna use everything at their disposal.
Absolutely.
Just to maintain the status quo, basically.
Yes, yes. Well, thank you so much. It's good to hear your voice. It's John in Texas. I want to go to Larry in Illinois, but before I do, let me read you a little bit about this report that came out based on the Sandy Hook school shooting. Now, they said that they're concerned about siloed systems of education, physical health, and mental health care for children. In other words, areas that are private when they talk about it being siloed. They say that it strongly implicates the need to assist parents with understanding and addressing the needs of children with complex development and mental health disorders. They say universal, and this is a report from James F. Tracy. We've interviewed him on the show many times. He did a good job in getting this out and analyzing it. So read some of the details from this report. They're calling for universal screening for behavioral health and developmental impairment for children from ages 21, from ages birth to 21. They want to assess to training and information concerning mental health issues for teachers, administrators, service personnel, pediatricians, and parents. In other words, they're going to train anybody that the child might come in contact with at school or a doctor or whatever. They want to train them as informants for the government. Just like we've seen people calling 911 and getting two people killed recently who had nothing but BB guns, basically calling in to the police and saying, in one case, even saying, I think it's probably a toy weapon, a fake gun. Nevertheless, the police showed up and shot this young man. And Walmart is even more egregious. The guy who called 911 kind of hyped it up for the police, and they wound up shooting the guy dead without even giving him a chance to put down the BB gun that he was going to buy in Walmart that he was walking around the store with. So do we really want to have trained professionals who've been trained by Homeland Security and the Department of Education to finger parents? We just had a family we talked about the early part of the show. They had essentially their house broken into, the parents pepper sprayed, tasered, their children taken away because they were accused of having a messy house. Is that what we're going to see with this? Let's go on with some of the other things. They're going to address, of course, also the, quote, role of denial in illness. So if you think that everything is fine in your home and you don't need intervention from the state, maybe you're just in denial and we need to do something about it. That's all the more reason for us to get involved in your life. They want to have a better outreach to parents who have difficulties, quote, reaching out. So in other words, if you're not going to the government for help, if you don't have your kids in a government school, then you have difficulty reaching out. Perhaps you feel, quote, mistrust in the medical and educational systems. No doubt. I do. You should. If you don't feel mistrust in them, why should we trust them explicitly for everything? Why should we give them carte blanche in our life? That was never the way this country was founded. This country was founded with checks and balances because we understand that simply because somebody works for the government, they don't become an angel. They still have the same problems that everybody else does. If we had angels, then we wouldn't need that kind of oversight, but we don't. We can have good people in government. We can have bad people in government. We need to keep that arm's length there. They also want state consideration of an audit of existing homebound practices and procedures. They get very close to saying homeschool, don't they? But they say homebound practices and procedures. And finally, they say, this is the summary that we get from James Tracy. He says, in reality, the OCA report lays bare the groundwork for implementation of a nationwide program similar to the one presently being beta tested in Scotland called Getting It Right for Every Child, where they are going to where they've mandated an assignment of a named person, a government minder, for every child and young person, and a lead professional that renders the traditional family role of a distant caretaker. Understand that this is a globalist agenda because we see the same goals, the same tactics being used in Scotland that they are now proposing, piggybacking this off of the Sandy Hook situation and being funded by $160 million from our federal government. Let's go to a caller here, Larry in Illinois. Would you like to, you said you wanted to talk about Ferguson and about the pedophile situation. Go ahead.
Well, you know, he kind of picked up on my thunder, the first caller there. And, you know, I'm thinking here when you're talking, we're kind of talking these subjects to death, our own death. This country is responsible for a lot of these subjects that we talk about worldwide. And it's because money, the love of money, the root of all evil has gotten into the system. And if they can't buy people off like they've done, they'll do it through the electronic voting and that. And us being responsible for this, David, has got to stop.
Yes.
They have mere mundane earthly things that they protest in other countries, even Russia. People will get in the public square and let the powers that be know that we're not going to put up with this anymore. And we just sit back here and talk to this thing all the time and that, and it just gets to be the same old thing. And it's also disillusioning to hear people or just see people sit by along with myself. And if we're not going to come out of our houses, folks, I mean, the world's just going to keep getting worse. And
well, I think it's I think, Larry, it is a case of education. It is a case of the info war. And I do believe that people are waking up. It's frustrating for you. It's frustrating for those of us who have been awake for a while to look at the people who are still asleep. And yet we are seeing signs that people are starting to wake up. And some people are not being shut down again by just putting this into a racial paradigm. We look at the police brutality, for example, and the article that I read earlier about Anonymous getting involved in the Beaver Creek Walmart in Ohio, that shooting there, and demanding that some action be taken. But yeah, we do have a very passive American public, don't we? It's part of it, I think, is it's a control grid that is what we are fed as far as information. And I think there's a component of it that's what we're fed in our food and water supply that helps to pacify us more so than in other countries. But putting minders in charge of kids from the age of birth to 21, we've got to understand the biggest control instrument, in my opinion, is the government school. Every tyrant since the time of Plato has understood that you want to get rid of the family, you want to directly interpose the government in control of the children, and that's the way you control the future society. Plato's Republic, he proposed that no one would even know who their parents were. They were going to look only to the state as their parent. And over again, we see this being replicated by degrees, by increasing degrees, by the Department of Education, by the centralized federal control, where they establish the traditions that our children understand, their understanding of history, their understanding of how society is to work. That is all being controlled and fed to them in a controlled propaganda way. That's why it really is an educational issue. It really is an info war. We have to push back. We have to essentially open people's minds and re-educate them from the propaganda that they've been fed in school. Thank you, Larry. Let's move on to Patricia in Arizona. Patricia, go ahead.
Hi.
Go ahead.
I think that all of this interference in our homes and everything is all going to end up leading back to his bill that he passed to find out how our brains work. Mm-hmm. And when we're all classified as subhuman, you know, we all have defects, we're all handicapped, we're all, you know, something not mirroring Hitler's perfect person, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Why then we will all be eligible for experimentation to find out how our brains work.
Yeah, there's a real danger of medical tyranny, isn't there? It's one of the things that really concerned me, because as we see over and over again, people who are troubled, whether it's sometimes it's real, sometimes many times it's a false flag. But in almost all these cases, there are SSRI drugs involved. There are psychologists who are involved with this. And of course, they come back and say, well, we need to, and I've even heard many, many, many conservatives say, we need to test gun owners for mental sanity or mental competence before we do that. That is opening up the camel's nose under the tent for the most massive infringement of self-defense that we've ever seen. They can basically label anybody as being insane, and it's, as you pointed out, it's very easy to find some kind of an anomaly with someone. There are clear cases where people should not be allowed to have guns, but we can address those individually. If they're that dangerous, it's not just an issue of them having guns. They should be locked up if they truly are a dangerous person. And again, that brings up questions about how do we determine if somebody can be committed. That's something that we need to be very, very careful about, just as careful as we should be, but aren't in our criminal justice system. I mean, we need to have a lot of protection for people who are accused of being a criminal, as well as people who are accused of being mentally dangerous or incompetent. But if they truly are, having a weapon is just, having access to a gun is just one thing a person can do. Of course, they can kill people in any number of ways, with a hammer, with automobiles, whatever. If they're a danger to society, they shouldn't be out. But before they get locked up, we need to be very, very careful about that. Thank you, Patricia. Let's move on to Stephen in Florida. Stephen?
Yeah, hey, good afternoon, David. I wanted to talk about this first article you brought up at the beginning of the show about this homeschooling family in Missouri, but I wanted to get into from that a bigger picture of something that really hits home with me, and it's just so deep, and a lot of people don't really realize what this involves. When you talked about this, I've had personal experience with CPS a couple of times. Once when we had a child, our oldest child woke up in the middle of the night. I thought he was, he looked like he was basically devil-possessed, but he was just having nightmares. And I made the mistake of, trying to wake him up, smacking him on his face. I left a bruise. Me and my pastor took him to the hospital, and that was a big error because then I got interrogated by the cops. CPS showed up the next day, took a Christian lawyer to get them off our backs. And then in 2003, we had a child die, and we had CPS show up at the door after the people at Texas Children, this was in Texas time, reported us for child abuse and medical neglect, and we had to go through that whole mess. And what I wanted to say is this. There's been a bunch of stuff you guys have reported on, and let me preface this. Have you ever heard of Alfred Kinsey?
I'm sorry, heard of who?
Alfred Kinsey.
The Kinsey Report?
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, and there's a documentary you ought to look at and everybody else called the Kinsey Syndrome. You can go to kinseysyndrome.com. And it's so eye-opening to see what this man, funded by the Rockefellers, with our government's knowledge, single-handedly and secretly did to undermine our whole jurisprudence system against children. He took Freud's postulation that children are sexual from birth.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why
mm-hmm.
we have so much of this garbage going on today. You guys have reported on, for instance, the couple in Connecticut, the guy tied with Oath Keepers a couple years ago, how CPS came in and took their infant daughter away. She had evidence of child abuse.
Oh, absolutely. And they will hide this and say that it is part of civil liberties, like they did in England, where they said they wanted to decriminalize sex with children as young as four. The biggest problem with all this is that it is so grotesque for the normal person to look at, they ignore it. We're going to be right back with your phone call. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight, your host, on this November 24th, 2014. We've been taking callers' responses to some of the news that we covered earlier about pedophile rings breaking into the homes of homeschoolers. And, of course, that family has won a victory in the court in Missouri, basically shutting down and condemning the actions of the police in terms of breaking into their home without a search warrant. We're told at the door, no, you need to get a search warrant to come in here because they'd been harassed by the police and CPS. Nevertheless, they tasered, pepper sprayed the parents, took their children away for quite some time. They've now had a victory from the Missouri court. They are now also suing that police department for some compensation to the suffering of that family. And, of course, the children witnessed all of that. What do we do about this? We had a caller earlier say it's very discouraging to hear all this news and to see how things are moving along. And yet there is some good news, I think, at the local level. And I think this is where it's going to have to happen. I think that not just with the pedophile rings that we see at the highest levels of our government and other governments, but also with the corruption of the concentration of power and money in Washington, I don't think it's going to be reformed by sending Mr. Smith to Washington and having him stand up and do a filibuster. I don't think that's going to happen. I think it's going to need to be shut down from the outside. And there's signs that there are people waking up in state legislatures who are willing to do that. We have a Texas representative who's introduced a bill to nullify all federal gun control regulations. That's Tim Kleinschmidt. here in Texas, House Bill 176, Second Amendment Preservation Act, that would say you're not going to take the Second Amendment here in Texas. We've also got a Utah representative who has introduced a bill to cut off water use to the NSA data center. Now, this is something that was proposed by some people at the 10th Amendment Center earlier. We've had bills introduced locally in California to essentially take away some of the utilities that the NSA is using, getting subsidized in their area. And of course, this is the massive data center in Utah, the Bluffdale Center, where they're using the amount of water and electricity that could run a very small city is being used for this data center. What are they doing there? Well, they're storing everything about everyone indefinitely until they can data mine it to go after any political enemies that they wish to. Now, just before World War II, the Dutch government had an idea that they thought it would be a good idea to write onto 3x5 cards information about everybody in their country, just because I don't know why. I don't know why they would do that. Maybe they just like to keep those kinds of records or something, like detailed records. But when the Nazis broke into that country, they tried to destroy it, but the 3x5 cards were packed so densely they couldn't get them lit to destroy it. So what happened? Well, the Nazis got access to that data, and they were able to round up and pull out anybody they thought might be a threat to them, regardless of whether that person was even really a threat. But they were able to immediately identify and eliminate any political opposition to them, any kind of opposition to them. Think about the data center in Utah. That data is sitting there waiting for some tyrant, some would-be tyrant, somebody who has nefarious plans. And we know that just because somebody is in government doesn't mean that they are angels, as I said recently. We've just seen how they tried to justify a pedophile ring in the name of national security. That data is sitting there waiting for the next tyrant to come in and use it against political enemies to shut down any kind of political dissent, any kind of opposition. It's waiting there for their corporate sponsors, their crony capitalists, to use against their competitors. That's why it needs to be shut down, besides the fact that it's against the supreme law of the land. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I will take your calls right after the break. Stay with us.
Big Brother. Mainstream media. Government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight, your host today. We're going to be going to our reporters in Ferguson, Missouri, Jakaria Jackson and Joe Biggs. They tell us that the grand jury has reached a decision. They're waiting for it to be announced right now. So we're going to go to them in the next segment. But in this segment, I want to get right back to your phone calls. We got some people that have been waiting on the line. Let's go to Anthony in Florida. Let's see how many people we can get through here in a short period of time. Go ahead, Anthony.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead. You're on.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I'd just like to elaborate that what's going on in Ferguson is definitely there are those. There's real racism, which should always be confronted, and then there are those who fan the flames of racial tension because they have their own selfish interests at heart.
Yes, that's true, and that's the danger, isn't it, that real racists get a pass if we try to make phony claims of racism.
And also, too, I'd like to say that with these police officers, I just recently looked at a graph, and it really astonished me. Like, if you look at a police officer in the 1960s, his uniform was just a basic, like, a billy club and, not mm-hmm. handcuffs, gun, and all that stuff. And then as it progressed further, it looked more and more, you know, intimidating and such. And the fact that they have lowered the standards to the point where they let these people who obviously have mental problems, who are sociopaths, who will shoot first and then ask questions.
Well, they actually had a police officer who sued. It was a police department in the Northeast. I can't remember which state it was. Maybe the guys can look it up. He actually sued the department because they had a maximum IQ requirement. You could not have 100, anything over 100 IQ, I think. And he sued them. They did not want him on the force because they said he had too high IQ, and the court actually upheld their standards. That's the most amazing thing about it. Yeah, we've seen a militarization of the police. We know that's being driven out of the federal government. That is their agenda. They want to militarize the civilian police force, and they want to use the military as civilian police. They're trying to conflate and combine those two. Let's go to, thank you, Anthony. Let's go to Jacob in Ohio. Go ahead, Jacob.
Hello, Anthony, or David. The control of the government is crazy in our schools right now. I mean, you have the army workers in there that try to get people to sign up with them, and they just sit there and wait and have contests to win a free iPad or this, and have the kids come up just to register, and then your name's in the system, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. I could not believe there was an article last week about a school district in Pennsylvania essentially giving the school officials the right to strip search children in their school. And they said, the school superintendent, when questioned about it, she said, well, no, they wouldn't do that for drugs. I really can't imagine a scenario in which they would do it. But we need to give that power to our police in the schools. And I'm like, where does it stop? Where do we have any kind of constraint on the police? We just give them carte blanche to do anything that they want to our children. And I think that's one of the reasons why so many people have pulled their children out of the government schools and are homeschooling them. Thank you, Jacob. Let's go to Jerry in West Virginia. Jerry, go ahead.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking the call. David, I am mostly concerned, not to deviate from the subject, but we had a big water spell here in West Virginia, and frankly, we've had very little feedback from the government, and frankly, you cannot reach anyone that seems to have some sort of a idea of what seemed to happen, and we cannot reach anyone here that can tell us what the situation is. Of course, this is the fracking state of the states, mm-hmm. and we are bombarded by chemicals and problems, and yet no one seems to be, holding the fort. Who do we call? How can we call these officials? And do they really take us seriously?
You're going to have to organize outside of them and put pressure on them in the press. Thanks for calling. We're going to be right back with Jakari Jackson and Joe Biggs from Ferguson, Missouri.
The government's
receiving this transmission, you are the resistance. Live from Austin, Texas, broadcasting worldwide, it's Alex Jones.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. This is David Knight in Austin, and we are being joined right now by our reporters in Ferguson, Missouri, Jakari Jackson and Joe Biggs, who've been there for the last week awaiting the grand jury decision. We've now heard that there has been a decision made by the grand jury, but of course, as we pointed out earlier, the grand jury is a different situation than a courtroom. There's usually not a judge. There's not an argument from the defense attorney. Instead, it's just a prosecutor and a large jury. That's what the grand means. It means that there's more than 12 people, maybe two dozen or more. So they have finished their deliberations, but of course, with it being a closed, secretive session, they will be able to release this, I guess, whenever and however they wish. Let's go to Jakari Jackson in Ferguson, Missouri right now.
How you doing, David? Jakari Jackson reporting from Clayton, Missouri. What, I got a little reverb in my ear. I don't know if you guys are hearing that as well.
No, don't hear that. But still, you haven't heard any details as to what the decision has been, only that they have reached a decision. Is that correct?
Yes, it was reported by CNN, I think, just a few minutes ago. that they had reached the decision, but like you said, they're still stringing us along to find out exactly what that is. So hopefully it'll be sometime in the near future. Hopefully it'll happen while we're live on the show. But meanwhile, you can see the surroundings around us. We've done some reports over the past couple of days showing you guys outside the Justice Center. You can see all the media trucks, heavy police presence out here today. This is the largest police presence we've seen in this location since we started our broadcast. And also they have all the barricades and all the things going on over here to the other side of the screen. I want to talk a little bit about, before we get to the Darren Wilson verdict, some of the things have been going on in and around the St. Louis area. Last night, we went out to another march, another peaceful march. I think the only injury to report was a journalist got hit in the head with a rock, I believe it was. But we marched peacefully with a group of about 1,000 people for about an hour in Shaw, Missouri, which is a little bit south of here. And it's good. You know, they do the shutdown, the streets, the shut it down for Michael Brown, as they call it. They go into an intersection and they shut it down for 4 minutes, symbolizing the 4 minutes that Michael Brown, or excuse me, the 4 hours that Michael Brown was left just dead on the road to bleed out without any chance of being revived. Mm-hmm. So they've been doing that. And the police last night were very well behaved. I think they've learned their lesson. They've had plenty of mistakes to learn from. They're staying 2 or 3 blocks in front of the protesters. They would block off traffic for about 4 minutes or whatever it was so they could shut down the protest, and then they would continue on with the march. So it's very peaceful, minus the guy who got hit with a rock. Everybody out there was in good spirits, and they keep hyping this up as it's going to be some huge violent thing. Is there a chance for violence? Yes, there is, but the majority of the people I've met out here don't want anything like that. They think if there is going to be violence, it's going to be outside agitators and other people who come in who just take advantage of the situation. But the people in Ferguson, the people here in Clayton, nobody really wants that to happen. Everybody's just preparing for the worst. You know, it's hope for the best, but prepare for the worst.
Well, you know, Jakari, there was also this report that we have up on Infowars.com. Besides the march that you just mentioned about a reporter getting hit in the head, there was also a report that a journalist was arrested. The police say that he was standing in the street, yet they have witnesses, multiple witnesses came forward, disputed that claim. They had photos and videos showing that he was taking photos from the sidewalk. Is this a similar tactic, or is it maybe the same incident that you guys were talking about a couple of nights ago where the police were warning people?
Yeah, it's the same one. We were there that night. It was in the night that happened, the police were much better behaved. I can't say they acted perfectly, but they had a different guy in charge. He had the guys pretty calm, pretty collected. And then they were standing in front of the police station, but they went inside the firehouse around and down the block to address some people who were standing in the street. Just a block down the road. So they get there, they tell all the journalists, all the protesters that they cannot stand on that side of the street. I was across the street. I didn't get the best view. One of our viewers told me that you can kind of see in the corner of one of my videos, but I think Joe captured it pretty well, at least when they cuffed the guy and were walking him into the firehouse. So you guys can go watch those videos for yourself. But it's my understanding that, yes, the journalist was not impeding the flow of traffic or anything else. And Joe was telling me that one of the officers was just doing what he was told to do. Well, we've been hearing that through social media. We can't confirm that one way or the other, but people are claiming on social media that one of the officers had volunteered the statement to somebody off camera, I guess, that he was just doing what he was told to do to target this particular journalist. That's why they haven't targeted us, and we hope that trend continues, but I don't think they want the media fear that goes along with arresting a lawful reporter who's just standing on the sidewalk. Sure. Legally photographing. So
let me ask you, Jakari.
Things have gotten better with the police. Well, go ahead, Dave.
Let me ask you, if the people there, you said a lot of them seem to be knowledgeable that it's an issue that is bigger than race. Has anybody been talking about the situation in Ohio, where, of course, there was that guy in Walmart? Someone called 911 and said he was waving a gun wildly around in Walmart. He was actually carrying a BB gun that he was going to purchase from Walmart. He was carrying that with him. The police showed up and just shot him down. And then the police, no action was taken against the police that shot him. We see that there really hasn't been a whole lot of protest going on there. There's been some protests from student groups, from an open carry group, but now the mantle of protest there seems to be strictly anonymous protesters showing up. There's a great picture, murder is wrong, even when the murderer wears blue. So they're calling on that police officer to be fired or at the very least disarmed. No action was taken against that police officer there in Ohio. Is there any any understanding or any connection in the minds of the people there at Ferguson to some of these other cases? Because clearly that was a case of, to me, that was much more clear-cut in terms of overreach and excessive violence of the police.
Yes, people are aware of things going on in other parts of the country. Of course, the latest thing that happened in New York, and also the young man who had the BB gun. So, you know, they'll come out and they'll chant the names of these other people, not just Michael Brown, but also people, other people here in the St. Louis area and around the country as well. So they're very aware and cognizant of the things that are going on. But why we don't have larger protests, larger demonstrations for those things, I don't really know. I'm not exactly sure how it happened that this is the issue that people decided to focus on. Mm-hmm. You know, there have been media about these other events as well, but this was the kind of the catalyst that got everybody together to focus on the situation. Like you said, you know, there's a lot of things that they're keeping from us as far as the particulars of this trial. But the things you mentioned, the Walmart shooting, the guy who got shot in New York in the stairwell, there are other more definitely clear-cut examples. But why I came to this, I'm not exactly sure.
Well, of course, it seems like to me that there's a lot of people in the conservative community, people who would have kind of a knee-jerk reaction to defend law enforcement first and foremost and not really look very closely at particular incidents, it seems like they also are the same kind of people who are going to not be persuaded by demonstrations. They're actually, I think it's going to kind of backfire against those people when they see a massive group of people carrying signs and shutting down intersections, that sort of thing. It's going to push them further into the camp of saying, yeah, we need to have even more law enforcement, don't we, to kind of shut this stuff down. Maybe there's other ways that we need to reach those people.
Well, the thing about it is, David, you know, whether it's police actions or military actions, they think if you're wearing a uniform, a lot of people, anything you do is, you know, on the up and up. But that's not the case. You know, we've seen some horrific things done in war theaters. We see horrific things done on our streets here in America, you know, growing the opium overseas, all kinds of things going on. So I'm not one of those people who think, you know, just because you're a uniform, everything you do is in the right.
Yeah.
So, but there are people who think that way. You know, they think that whether the guy that got shot in the stairwell in New York or some of these other instances, well, the officer pulled out a gun, they think these officers are these highly trained, you know, James Bond type of guys. They're the master of every situation. They can show up. They have perfect aim. They can do all these things. But that's not the case. These guys don't have very good training. And the training they do get, you know, it's this federalized training. You know, these are very harsh, brutal tactics, you know, and since we've been out here the second time from our original trip in August, they have gotten a lot better, but there's still a lot of work to be done.
Well, and of course, it's the same sort of thing we saw in the story we covered last week coming out of the Albuquerque Police Department, the police department that has the highest percentage of shootings per capita, far greater than large cities like New York. And again, after they've been under the special scrutiny of the Department of Justice, because so many people have complained about them, they still come out with a killology class and essentially training them that they're in a war zone, essentially telling them you are in a war and you are a warrior. There are people who wake up every morning determined to send your family to a box. That's the kind of mindset that causes this to happen. And of course, we saw earlier in that same area in Albuquerque, that's where they shot the homeless man that was up in the hills earlier this year. We also saw that they had instituted what one person at the New Mexico Police, an instructor at the New Mexico Police Academy, said was a shoot-first curriculum. This veteran instructor at the police academy refused to teach that curriculum, calling it a shoot-first curriculum, and they fired him because of it. They were not going to change the curriculum. So we see this being pushed, and yet there's so many people, I think, that are still just mindlessly supporting anything that law enforcement does, not concerned about establishing some outside oversight or some rules of engagement. I think those people need to be reached. There's a number of ways that we can reach people. I've heard callers call in. They're concerned. They don't feel like we're making headway, but I do believe that we are making headway in the information war. I think demonstrations are a part of it. They will appeal and change the minds of some people. Other people, we're going to need a more rational approach. They're going to need to see these incidents as people videotape them on their phones and put them up on the internet. I think that will help a lot of people.
I think that is the way.
Yeah.
We think about the guy who's got strapped down to have the no refusal blood draws. You know, that's a very powerful video, and I think that definitely helps wake people up.
Yes, absolutely. All right, we're going to be right back, and I guess we're going to get some input from Joe Biggs, also on the scene there in Ferguson, Missouri. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Thank you, Jakari. Show. I'm David Knight, and we're going to go to one of our reporters in Ferguson, Missouri right now, Joe Biggs. Joe?
How are you doing, David? We're outside the Justice Center in Clayton, Missouri. And like you can understand right now, tensions are pretty high. There's a much larger police presence today. There's a lot of different security teams driving around. Just tensions are high for the verdict. What's going to happen today? Everyone's just waiting to find out how to react and how to respond. I mean, you've got to understand, this is since August, and this has just been building up so much over time. People have gone from kind of getting tired of it to feeling like they're being teased, that the verdict was going to come out last week. Now here we are a week later waiting on this again. So everyone's just really emotional, and they just want to find out, because like I said before, that Ferguson fatigue has definitely sat in, and people are just fed up, and they just want to find out what's going on.
You know, we're getting Washington Post, CNN, others saying that press conferences are being prepared, that the grand jury has reached a verdict. They're also saying, this Washington Post article, that although a parallel federal civil rights investigation of the shooting is continuing, federal investigators have all but concluded that they don't have a case against Darren Wilson. So it looks like this is going to be, he's going to be found innocent. They're not going to move forward with prosecution. And I think, of course, really as we mentioned earlier in the program, a grand jury can be used, and I believe it's being used here, to provide political cover for the prosecutor. He could move ahead, even if the grand jury said they didn't want to indict into a trial. The prosecutor still has that opportunity to do that. So he's trying to get some political cover from these people. What do you think, in terms of the people that you've talked to, the pulse that you've gotten from people as you've been there this last week, what do you think is going to happen? Do you think it's going to get violent?
Yes.
You do.
I do. There's more people out here who want peace, but at the end of the day, David, it only takes a few bad apples to really just turn everything into complete and total chaos. You know, last night I got a picture from an area in Shaw where people said they want to burn it down. So, like I've said, tensions are very high. You know, you've got 90% of the people out there who are just super peaceful, loving people who just want to go out there and have their voices be heard. But you're going to have some out there who really want nothing more than to start some chaos, release anger in any way they can, because they feel like that's the only way that they can be heard. So it's one of those things that we just have to wait and sit back and find out what's going to happen and plan accordingly.
Well, and of course, last time you were there, you got shot with a rubber bullet. You guys got gassed. We saw a video that you guys took where they were using laser sights to target people that were, about 100 yards away or so? I mean, they were no immediate threat to the people, yet they clearly had their guns and sights pointed on them. So, I mean, there's two sides to this as well. Do you see any, how do you feel? You believe that, of course, all it takes is, like you said, is just a few agitators. They could be false flag agitators or whatever. What is your take in terms of the police? You guys have said that they seem to be more professional this time.
The lieutenant that was there at the Ferguson Police Department that came in the other night, he was very professional, had very great leadership skills, and really led the officers there that night in a responsible manner. They did everything right. There were arrests made. There were some people who purposely, I don't think they minded being arrested. They just they stood there right there in the middle of the road. But a lot of people are saying, hey, you know, we're worried about the MRAPs again. You know, we don't want to have our children in the neighborhood have these laser dots on their chest because some guy is pointing a sniper rifle at them. You know, the way things were handled in August, it makes a lot of people worried now. Is that going to happen again? So everyone is kind of on pins and needles, because when this verdict comes out, you can tell the government's they're preparing for the worst. They're expecting massive riots. They're expecting hell to break loose. So everyone's sitting here waiting, including myself. Are they going to come out here again, arrest journalists, shoot at journalists? Are they going to come out here in full battle rattle in these MRAPs and tanks and all this stuff? I just hope it doesn't get to that point again. But, you know, they're sending 100 FBI agents. They've already done that. They've got 1,000 police officers in the area. That's almost more than we have in Iraq. So it's pretty amazing when you look at the number of people they have here for something. So it's very interesting to watch that.
Now, I can tell from looking at you that it is freezing cold there. What's the temperature there?
Oh, it's below freezing, and the wind is blowing extremely hard.
Wow. And you're standing in front of what? Is that the court building, or is that the police station?
Yes, the Justice Center. This is where apparently they're convening right now. And as you can see, they've had this place barricaded off now for about 2 days in anticipation for the verdict. And like I said, there's a lot of police officers out here today. There's vehicles parked around every corner. You know, they're not taking this lightly. They've got, you know, all the mainstream media bigwigs who you watch on Fox and CNN.
Well, everyone's out here today. Joe. We got to go to commercial break. That's Joe Biggs and Jakari Jackson in Ferguson, Missouri. We'll go back to them as we find more information. Stay with us.
The Empire's on the run. Alex Jones and the GCN Radio Network.
And a backbeat narrow and hard to master. Some call it heavenly in its brilliance. Others mean and rueful of the Western dream.
If you are receiving this transmission live from Austin, Texas, broadcasting worldwide, you are the resistance. It's Alex Jones.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight here in Austin. We've just been talking to our reporters in Ferguson, Missouri, Jakari Jackson and Joe Biggs. Now, tonight we have the InfoWars Nightly News that starts at 7 Central, 8 Eastern. You'll see that on prisonplanet.tv. And, of course, if you have a subscription, that helps to support our operation. That helps us to send reporters there tonight. It will likely be live. We'll be having live updates from our reporters there, Jakari Jackson and Joe Biggs. They'll be getting the reactions, hopefully the peaceful reactions of people to this verdict. It looks like the verdict is going to not result in the prosecution of the police officer. A lot of people there are going to be angry about that. So it remains to be seen if that's going to be a peaceful protest, what's going to happen. So they'll be there talking to people. They'll be covering it if it breaks out into something that is violent. Again, that'll be tonight at 7 Central, 8 p.m. Eastern. The InfoWars Nightly News on Prison Planet TV. Your subscription can be shared with up to 20 people now. Alex has extended that. Can be watching the news live, supporting our operation, having access to all of Alex Jones's documentaries. As we were just talking about in the last segment, a lot of people aren't going to have their minds changed by people demonstrating in the streets and shutting down roads. There's also a lot to be done in the information war, a lot of background that people need to understand. And, of course, you're going to get that with those documentaries. That's one of the best ways to wake people up, to give them a broad perspective, to give them the background to understand what's going on. And then every night we give you what's happening with the nightly news, a recap at 7 Central, 8 p.m. Eastern. Now, also, we have Silver Bullet is back in stock. But, of course, as usual, it is a limited supply. Once it runs out, it's going to take at least 6 weeks for us to get more in because it's very difficult and dangerous for us to make it in these high concentrations. It's 30 parts per million and a pure base of deionized water. It is free of toxic artificial additives right now. There's never been a more important time for you to have a powerful, clean form of colloidal silver within your reach for you and for your family. Go to InfoWarsLife.com to order your silver bullet now or call 1-800-1888-253-3139. That number again is 888-253-3139. 3139. That also supports our operation. Now, I want to go back to our phone calls. We had a lot of people calling in about immigration, about Ferguson, about the reports we had of what happened to homeschoolers, as well as the pedophile ring that is starting to gradually be exposed in Britain after 30 years of cover-up from those who are in positions of authority inside the highest levels of government, inside the highest levels of Scotland Yard and the BBC. That's gradually starting to come out. Let's go to Dan in Michigan. Dan?
Hi, Mr. Knight. How are you doing?
Hi, doing good. You're on. What's up? What do you want to talk about?
I thought it would be interesting for a group like you guys to make some instructional-style videos to reenact some of the previous shootings, but flip the races or make the cop not a cop and vice versa, just to throw out some cognitive dissonance.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. There's something to be said about having a reenactment, isn't it? I remember a very powerful documentary several years ago, decades ago, actually, came out in the 80s. It's called Thin Blue Line, and it was a documentary done by Earl Morris. I think he won Academy Award for it, but basically it was a guy who was on death row, and he went back and interviewed him and a lot of other people. In the course of the documentary, he was actually able to get a confession from the real killer, and he was on death row. This is a guy who I believe was a drifter, or he was homeless, and the police picked him up. It was the death of a police officer, and they were definitely going to get somebody to pay for that crime, but they picked the wrong person. But that documentary, the reason that rung a bell was because that documentary used live reenactments, and they had multiple people's stories told, some of them true, some of them not true. And what he did was he reenacted each of these persons' testimony, and you could kind of see the conflict in it as well. It's a very interesting documentary, but there's a lot of power to be had in a reenactment. Go ahead. Was there something else you wanted to say?
Yeah, one more point. I wanted to call in a long time ago and say this, but I think it's important now, too. I think you guys could do like a highlighting police officer who's very constitutionally minded, because we have so many villains out there right now. Everybody's hating on the police, but there's a lot out there that do a lot of good and believe in Constitution and liberty. That you guys could just do like one a week or one a month, just highlighting somebody who's a police officer or something like that.
That's true. We've done that in the past. We've had, there was that police officer that was in upstate New York that stood up for the constitutional rights of protesters on that opt-out and film weekend, if you remember that. Stan Lenick, we've talked to him. We've also talked to Shane Harger, who is a constitutional police officer, a police commissioner. Actually, I think he was the chief of police, was actually his title. He got, again, it was the TSA. Kind of they're in the kind of the front lines of tyranny, aren't they? But basically, as they pushed back against him at an airport, he pushed back against them. They got him fired. They eventually got him indicted. As we're talking about grand juries, it's very easy to get anyone indicted for anything. So we've tried to highlight people who are concerned, who are constitutional sheriffs and peace officers. And there are people out there, as Frank Serpico talks about them. He calls them not whistleblowers, but lamplighters. I think that's a really good way to put it. People who expose it, people who are not going to go along with the crowd. And there's a lot of police officers out there. They come under a lot of pressure. Usually the system comes back against them. We see that with Adrian Schoolcraft that is working its way through the system now in New York City. We just had an analyst with the city of New York talk about how they had whitewashed and fudged the numbers. I guess we should call it Grubering the numbers on a report that talked about excessive police violence in New York. So we have tried to reach out as we become aware of police officers who are speaking out. And, you know, just like we talk about citizens, if they don't get concerned enough to do something to try to get control of their government when the government does something wrong, the same thing is certainly true of people who are police officers. If you don't speak out, if you remain quiet, if you become part of a group rather than to stand up for your principles, then you're a part of the problem as well. So we always try to highlight people who are blowing the whistle or who are lighting the lamps and shining light on what's being done that shouldn't be done. Let's go to Richard in Arizona. Richard?
Okay. Yes, David, can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you. Go ahead.
Okay, I want to make three real quick comments on the police incidents that you brought up this morning. They really affected me. And I agree with the last caller that the good police needed a lot of support, and I tremendously appreciate them. One of the ways that we need to keep the police pure is to get rid of the bad ones immediately, and I want to mention what normal responses would have been to these three incidents.
Okay.
The first one with the guy that got killed on the stairwell, that policeman, maybe and maybe not, the other policeman that he was with, should be in prison waiting to see if he's going to get off lightly with life in prison or not.
Mm-hmm.
The second, and not wondering whether he's going to get fired or something along that.
That's not unpaid leave.
No, because crimes under color of law should be more serious than the same crime by a citizen.
I agree. That's a very good point. They should be taken more seriously. Yes, go ahead.
Absolutely. Now, the second one is the Walmart incident with the BB gun. Again, that should be in deciding the process right now, whether it's first-degree murder or just manslaughter. And the person should not be out on bail. They should be in prison waiting for that determination and trial. And the third one with the homeschool invasion, with the people accused of having a dirty house, those guys are terrorists, and they should be held under the strictest anti-terrorism laws right now that we have or that we can get. And that's a proper application of anti-terrorist laws, in my opinion.
I agree. Now, the case in the middle, the fellow who was killed in Walmart, and of course there was someone else who was there who died of a heart attack, scared to death, literally scared to death. In that particular case, they have refused to prosecute that officer, Sean Williams, in Ohio. So that's why Anonymous is strongly protesting that. As you pointed out, it's really incumbent upon police officers to stand up, because I believe if they don't, there's going to be a pendulum swinging in the other way, and perhaps so far in the other way that it's going to put rules on them where they would not be allowed to use legitimate force to protect themselves in a case where it is warranted. So I think it's very important, as you point out, that we see that justice is being served. We need to see that there's some outside oversight, as Frank Serpico has said, and we need to understand that people who commit crimes like the execution of this man, and they, I don't know why they did it. I don't understand what their motivations were. Frankly, I don't care. I don't care if what their motivations were. They killed a man. And so, as you pointed out, they should be in jail. They should be facing a verdict that is taking it more seriously. When people do this under color of law, when they use a uniform to commit crimes, it ought to be taken much more seriously. Let's go to Robert in Louisiana. Thank you, Richard. Let's go to Robert in Louisiana. Robert?
Hey, David. How you doing today?
Doing good. Go ahead. What's on your mind?
Me and another family, a member of mine, were the ones who put up the InfoWars Alex Jones billboards.
Oh.
And, yeah.
Well, so, thank you. Thank you. Great job.
Yeah. Well, look, I kind of had another idea, a promotional idea, that y'all could set up some kind of a contest so we could put up more of them. We could have a donation for the cause, or you could have like a contest entry fee, and people could send in their ideas, and you could judge them, and whoever wins, the best ones can have their billboards put up, and it'd be all listener funded.
Mm-hmm.
The listeners would fund it through the donations and the entry fees.
That's a great idea. Thank you so much for doing that. I know one of the billboards, I heard somebody call in last week and talk to Alex about it and run down a list of where the billboards were. I know one of them was in my old stomping grounds in Raleigh, North Carolina, where they've got, I think, an affiliate on on the northeastern side that was out of range of where we live, because we lived quite a bit to the west of Raleigh, actually. But that's a great idea. I'll pass that on. Thank you so much for doing that, and thank you for calling in. Robert in Louisiana. Was there anything else you wanted to say?
Yes, sir. I just wanted to thank Steve, ex-Navy SEAL, that called up. And he also gave me some documentaries that he, Blueprint for Truth, which is about 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
And Beyond Treason, which is about what he has, the Gulf War Syndrome. I encourage every American to look those up and watch them.
You know, that's what we were just saying. It's very, very important. Documentaries are a great way to wake people up because it allows you to take the time to cover a subject in depth. It gives people a background. It gives them a perspective. They can see the patterns being developed. We go through and we talk about what's happening in the news, and we try to fill in the details and connect the dots for people. But there's so much stuff that's happening in the news, and we don't have time to be able to go in and rehash everything every day. It would basically bore people to death. So we're basically kind of applying these things to news as it's breaking. So it's a great idea to go back and check those documentaries out. Thank you so much, Robert from Louisiana. Let's go to Alan in Georgia. Alan?
You're doing great. I just wanted to compliment you. The past couple of days, you've been doing a great job.
Oh, thank you. What was your comment?
I would like to say that, you know, I think the police situation in America is more like a cancer. And when people say that all cops aren't bad, I think it's just it just perpetuates. It almost sounds like, hey, every cell in your body is not a cancer cell. It's like that doesn't really help to say that because it's really out of control. I mean, It really is out of control. I mean, in my hometown here, there's a guy named Kendrick Johnson. Oh, boy. He was wrapped up in a wrestling mat. And, you know, he died at a high school at Lowndes County High School. And they've been brushing everything under the rug. The whole case was handled, you know, completely inappropriately. They ruled it an accident immediately whenever it seemed like more like a homicide. I mean, it's just all the evidence is adding up to foul play. It's leading back to an FBI investigator that, you know, goes to the school and has a son who got into a fight with the boy. I mean, it's just this stuff is really just metastasizing. I mean, it's just crazy. It's just...
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And it's being driven from the central government as well. And if we look back at this, there's a lot of aspects to it. Of course, you know, we have the war on drugs, I think, is the predominating influence as to what is breeding the violence and breeding the corruption. That's going on now for about 40 years. We haven't learned anything from that experience yet. There have been some who have. We've got law enforcement against prohibition, LEAP. We've talked to prosecutors, a former Chicago prosecutor there, who talks about how he used to be a drug warrior, but then he came to realize that not only was it totally ineffective in terms of saving people from drugs, just as we realize alcohol prohibition was totally ineffective, but it was destroying the police force and it was breeding this kind of violence. But, you know, there's another aspect of it, too, and we see that in the way the police are being used to raise revenue for local cities. And most of that in most areas comes from traffic violations. You know, there's a story that came out, and it's now about 6 weeks old, but it's an amazing story. It was on Business Insider. Chicago made its yellow lights 1/10 of a second shorter, and by doing that, they raked in $8 million in new tickets because it was automatically generating tickets. You know, the police have been used for that for quite some time, but essentially they're going to replace the police with these kind of automated responses. Once you see them monitoring the vehicle-to-vehicle communications that they are now mandating in cars, once you see insurance companies monitoring the black box that is being mandated in your car, you're going to see your insurance rates go up. You're going to see tickets being generated for you automatically because they're going to drive you out of the car as a driver. You're going to be in the car, but you're not going to have any control of it. They'll have a computer-controlled, government-controlled car. We're not going to need police for those kind of tickets anymore, but we're still going to have the TSA as control on the different modes of transportation that we have. We're still going to have the war on drugs, or it'll be replaced by the war on terror. That's the thing that is the real concern, the fact that they're using SWAT teams no longer for drug raids, although we had many, many cases of innocent people being killed by SWAT raids that were ostensibly about drugs. Now we see them using these kind of tactics against homeschoolers. We had the Department of Education using a SWAT team on a family, dragging them out in the middle of the night, face down on the lawn. Why? Because the mother, who no longer lived with that family, the mother was behind on her school college loans. That's the kind of in-your-face authoritarian government. We need to shut that down. There are many things that we need to do with that. We got one more segment here. I'm going to try to finish up with the people who have been waiting on the phone. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight in Austin. Now, we're going to have a live edition of Prison Planet TV tonight if there is a releasing of the verdict. Now, we've had many news outlets quoting sources saying that the grand jury has reached a verdict in Ferguson, Missouri, but we also have some sources like the LA Times saying that they're still considering as to whether or not they're going to publicize what that verdict was today. So if they do not publicize that, we will not be going live. But if they do, we have reporters in Ferguson, Jakari Jackson, Joe Biggs. They will be giving updates as to what's going on and the reactions of the public to the verdict. And that will be tonight at 7 Central, 8 Eastern on Prison Planet TV. I want to go back to your phone calls. This is our last segment. I want to try to get through as many of these as we can. Let's go to Mike in Pennsylvania. You had a comment about the Guccifer revelation about a possible Pennsylvania nuke. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yes, go ahead.
Good afternoon, David. This is Mike from FEMA Region 3. I've been doing the best I can to prep food, ammunition, air filters, water filters, but how can we prep against a nuclear attack? I totally feel this is something the government would do. What can we do as citizens? Where can we stand up? Who can we contact?
Turn your radio down a little bit, but I think we did get that. What can we do? Who can we contact? Quite frankly, we don't know when and where something is going to happen. We don't know if the government is going to do a false flag, if there's going to be a terrorist event, or if maybe there's going to be some kind of a natural grid down scenario. I think what you just pointed out that you're doing, and that is as much as you can to prepare for your family. Many of the things that you're going to be faced with, you would prepare for in the same way. So that's probably the best thing that you could do about it. As we find information specific, and again, Guccifer has a lot of credibility, in my opinion, because he has seen a lot of private correspondence going back and forth between some of the most powerful people in the world, and he's exposed extramarital affair, a lot of personal private business, but he's also seen the priority that they put on things like Bohemian Grove, that, in other words, that there's some kind of a hidden, secretive agenda, a gentleman's club, if you will, that is putting together this globalist agenda. And he's spoken about that, although the New York Times is not too interested in providing the details. They have dropped a couple of snippets, if only to laugh about it. Did you have another comment, Mike, that you wanted to make?
That's exactly what they're doing. This is all a joke to them. They try to break us all down as conspiracy theorists. This is not going to happen. Look at this guy. He's a nut. Mm-hmm. But this is absolutely serious, and you guys are the only one bringing this to the forefront. And, I'm terribly concerned about my children. I have two little boys. Who can we contact? What legislators would look into this? I don't think any of them have the guts, the nerve to stand up to Obama or whoever is running the show.
That's true. And if it is some kind of a false flag situation, it's going to be highly compartmentalized. I mean, just look at this situation of the pedophile ring and that's being exposed now in Great Britain. Everybody was told it was a matter of national security. It was highly compartmentalized. In many cases, you had people at Scotland Yard, at the BBC, at other places in the press who were tried to expose it. They were shut down by the people above them. So that's the problem that we're always faced with. Thank you, Mike, in Pennsylvania. Let's go to Jerry in Louisiana. I want to try to get through as many people as we can. Go ahead, Jerry.
Hey, it's Jerry in Indiana.
Oh, okay. Go ahead. Sorry.
Well, I wanted to bring up a few points. I just rode into town behind a convoy of state police vehicles escorting a private company. Now, if I could paint you a picture there, that's how far the state police has fallen down, is that now they work for private company.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We just had a case last week where they had a police officer drop evidence rather than violate the non-disclosure agreement he had with Harris Semiconductor over the Stingray program. They view their loyalties to the corporations. Thanks for joining us. Check in tonight, 7 Central, 8 p.m. Eastern, Prison Planet TV, InfoWars Nightly News.
Visit GCNLive.com today.